Suzanne Lynch, we'll turn to you now for, we've had our Boris update for the week. Trump has been very active in the last 24 hours. Yeah. He's filled about a year of news. Yeah. Tell us first maybe about what's been going on in North Korea.
Yeah, so this happened overnight in the afternoon, really, in North Korea. Donald Trump has been in Japan for the G20. He went to South Korea for a planned visit, and then he announced, really, on Twitter, he kind of put out an invitation for Kim Jong-un to meet him at the demilitarized zone between North Korea and South Korea. And early this morning, our time, Donald Trump arrived at the border, and there was Kim Jong-un. The two went to meet each other, and Donald Trump became the first sitting US president to step into North Korean territory. So look, this is his third meeting now with the North Korean dictator, and this is classic Trump. It was very much a live televised dramatic moment, and the reports now that some of his officials were warning him not to do this, that this wasn't a good idea, and it looks like North Korea only got a kind of a 24-hour notice period. So in terms of logistics, it was quite a big deal for the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, to come down and do this. They weren't sure if they would.
Which suggests that Kim Jong-un is keen to play.
But the big problem, of course, is that Donald Trump is negotiating with someone who hasn't made any concessions. I mean, the second summit with North Korea ended without agreement back in February in Vietnam. And North Korea has not made steps to denuclearise. That's the bottom line. In fact, back in May, it launched short-term missiles last month. So the problem is that Donald Trump is engaging with someone who hasn't given away anything, and America's got very little in return for that. So why is he giving him that international stage? I mean, not to be too dramatic, but there is touches of 1938 in this. We all know what was happening in Europe, and Britain, because it was so understandably, did not want to go into war, kept saying, oh, he's fine, Hitler's fine. You know, that's the policy of appeasement. Neville Chamberlain went over, came back with his piece of paper from Munich and said, peace in our time. This guy we can do business with. Donald Trump keeps giving Kim Jong-un the benefit of the doubt just because he's writing the letters, he talks about the personal chemistry. But there are doubts about how authentic mm-hmm. that is.
But when you look at how fractured, look at the G20 and how fractured the world is and everything, is there an argument to be made that it's good to talk to these guys?
Well, it's a gamble. I mean, we don't know. I mean, Kim Jong-un, what's going on in North Korea? There's very little knowledge of what's going on in there. Obviously, massive human rights issues. I'm wondering, and it's just coming out now, was it something to do with China? China is a kind of an ally of North Korea in that region. It's the country that does the only kind of trade with North Korea. And Trump met President Xi G20.
And this was positive vis-a-vis trade?
Yeah, it was positive. He said they're going to work together, China and America, on the trade deal, because that's been a real worry on the international economy.
And also, am I misunderstanding? Was that a kind of a stunning turnaround on Huawei when Donald Trump...
So that's an interesting point. So, and this came up during the meeting between Donald Trump and Leo Varadkar before the meeting, that the US has been warning its allies in Europe to not do business about Huawei, the big Chinese company.
Because it is effectively controlled by the Chinese
that
government,
it's
spying
that it's
for them and all
access.
That. Yeah.
But he seems to have done a bit of an about turn now this weekend. Now, he didn't lift the sanctions, just to be clear. He just hinted that he might soften it.
So and he said that he will allow American companies
to do business.
Continue to
or
sell,
he hinted
sell
that he
into
will allow
Huawei.
Them to.
Okay,
but this is
an
example of Trump's flip-flopping. So America went around the world, essentially, telling other allies, oh, maybe don't do business with Huawei. And then after 5 minutes with President Xi, Donald Trump said, actually, you know what, we're rethinking things. So this is his scattergun approach to diplomacy. But the North Korean issue, we're coming after a week of heightened tensions with Iran. So I think there's a completely contradictory foreign policy at work here. On the one hand, he's talking about doing the deal of the century with North Korea on nuclear arms. And at the same time, he pulled America out of a nuclear deal that was working, that curbed Iran's nuclear activity. So there's no surprise Iran has responded the way it has, and it's under crippling sanctions. US pulled out of the deal, even though Iran was sticking to its side. So on the one hand, when
there was a question over whether Iran was sticking to their side.
No, it was. The international monitors went in there, and they were. Trump's problem was that the deal itself, he feels, was too limited, and it would have allowed them in a few years to start again. But technically, they were. So, how do people do business with America. You know, even if North Korea did sign up to something with America, you know, if Trump is out of power, another president might do something else. So I think these mixed messages coming from Washington are very, very dangerous in terms of foreign policy.
Is it flip-flopping or mixed messages, or is he the ultimate transactional person in which you look at the trade war with China? He sat down the other day, there's a deal on the table. North Korea, yeah, we fell apart.
I agree on trade, but now, absolutely.
We fell apart with North Korea back in February, but we can do a deal. Is that the ultimate thing that he wants?
I think you're right on trade. I think trade, it's the one thing that he has been right on, I think, is to challenge China's dominance and its role in kind of stealing intellectual property and the kind of trade imbalances. He's right about that. But North Korea, for a deal maker, he hasn't got anything in return yet. So North Korea hadn't given anything. They've got everything. They've got three meetings with the US president. And the US yet has not got anything. So it's a bit like what we're talking about now. It's a gamble. If, you know, he's taken a chance on this. If it comes along and, yeah, they start denuclearizing, fine. But there isn't any sense so far that they will do that. And perhaps maybe cleverly for him, they won't before the election. So he'll be able to say, oh, I'm making these interludes and, you know, things are going well without anything actually happening until he's out of office. So
okay, now there's a lot of other American stories in your bailiwick this week, and I do want to get on to a few more of them. So obviously, there was that shocking photo this week of Oscar Martinez Ramirez and his 23-year-old daughter drowned crossing the Rio Grande, and her arm around his shoulder. You were down in Homestead in Florida. That is the biggest detention camp.
Yes, the largest child detention facility for children in the United States. And I went down there during the week. The presidential debate for Democrats was on in Florida, so that's why I was there. But Elizabeth Warren and some of the other candidates took a trip to this child center. Mm-hmm. There's about 2,500 children in there, mostly teenagers. And there it was, I can't even describe the heat. It was 10 o'clock in the morning, it was under the baking hot Florida sun. And you could see the young teenagers behind the wall. Like, nobody can get in there, but you could see them out in the yard. And I think this week, the immigration issue has resurfaced as a huge political issue in the United States. It's a year since the whole controversy over Donald Trump separating children from parents really kind of hit the headlines. Things have been relatively quiet. But this week, a couple of things happened. A facility in Texas, they had to move more than 200 children out of there because lawyers went into this facility and reported appalling conditions. So that put
There are toddlers in there being minded by children of 7 or 8 who they don't even know them. Children
no toothbrushes,
basic,
no nappies. Yeah. It was horrific. And one of the issues...
And by the way, I said that Oscar Martinez Ramirez's daughter was 23 months, obviously. Yeah. Sorry, I misspoke there.
So one of the issues for coverage is that, you know, media are not allowed into these facilities. So these lawyers in Texas got into that facility down there as part of a court case, and then they reported. Down in Florida, for example, Elizabeth Warren, these guys didn't get in there, but some local Congress people have got in. So I think
is this changing the game politically in
Well,
the
unfortunately,
US?
And this might sound very harsh to people, the Republican Mike Pence came out this week, just I think yesterday, and said that horrific picture actually underlines why we need to build a wall, why we need... So both political parties are using this. Democrats are using it to go this, you know, abhorrent immigration policy that President Trump is practicing. And the Republicans are saying this is why we need to be stricter on immigration and not encourage these people to come into our country. So it is reigniting this issue ahead of the election next year. And Trump knows that this works with his base. Elizabeth Warren, I think said it, and some other people I spoke to down there, protesters, said that Donald Trump uses this as bait. He uses immigrants as bait, you know, and he is going to probably mention that at his rallies because this is one of the reasons he was elected. And Republicans, you know, a certain amount of his supporters want to be tough on immigration, build a border wall. And I think, unfortunately, this underlines their argument in some way.
Grainne.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in this we're often focused on, you know, what are they doing in America? And that was a dreadful, dreadful photograph. And I suppose one hopes when you see those photographs that it will change something, that image of the child last year, you know, dead on the beach. But the truth is that, you know, if we have to look into our own backyards. I mean, the Italians this week arrested the captain of the ship who was actually saving people from the Mediterranean. You know, there have been more people have died trying to get across the Med to Europe than have died trying to get into the States. So this is a global issue, and I feel that we can be completely in the sort of, it's all about Trump and it's a terrible thing he's doing, but the global migration problem is something that the EU itself is not dealing with and can't be having the high moral ground.
But contrast the reaction now to that photograph and the reaction back down when that photograph, that little baby boy washing up, I think it was in Greece or Cyprus. Yeah. Like, that did prompt the European Union to open its doors. Mm. It prompted Germany, and I know it's led to a lot of trouble for Angela Merkel. But the reaction now is we're now using immigration as a political battle as opposed to actually dealing with it and showing some sort of compassion. At least.
Speaking of the political battle, so you went to the main event, really, in the Democratic debate. So the first night, it was odd the way they divided it up because Elizabeth Warren ended up being there the first night against a bunch of randomers. So you went the second night.
Yeah, so there's 25 candidates running for the Democratic nomination. 20 of those qualified, so they split it at random. 10 on the first night, 10 on the second. Now, as it happened, more of the heavy hitters were on the second night. So the first night was fairly conventional. The candidates actually had more in common than they had things that divided them. And Elizabeth Warren was the front runner, but very little tension, very little spark. The second night, though, I was down at the event in Miami. And really, the big takeaway there was the Joe Biden performance and Kamala Harris's attack on Biden over race. Now, Joe Biden was always going to be the fulcrum of this.
He's still a fair bit ahead of all the others, isn't he?
And he announced he was running back in April, and from that point, he's been ahead in virtually all polls, among Democrats and among the public at large. And we know that Donald Trump himself is worried because he's been tweeting about him. He's called him Sleepy Joe. And, you know, the officials near close to Trump are saying that this is the man that Donald Trump is most worried about, because the argument of Biden people is that he's the person who can communicate with the disaffected Democrats in the Rust Belt states that voted for Trump after voting Democrat all their life. So this is his selling point.
So Biden is the guy, a lot of people think, who could actually be Trump.
Yeah. Now I went,
what the Democrats are supposed to want. They've been obsessed with getting rid of Trump for 3 years now, but in every other way, except when it comes to an election, then they're not putting their best foot forward.
Well, this is the problem. I saw Joe Biden's first event in Pittsburgh last month, and he was quite good, and he engaged with people, and all the supporters I spoke to, you were getting this issue. Look, they're so appalled, really, by Donald Trump, Democrats. They just want somebody who is going to beat him. So they're prepared to put ideology aside. They might prefer someone more left-wing. But that all changed, I think, on Thursday. Joe Biden got up to that stage, and he crumpled, really, I think. Kamala Harris, who's a senator from California, not that experienced in national politics, but she was the Attorney General of California for years. Yeah. She got up, took on Joe Biden, and there was a few worrying things. Number one, he didn't seem ready for her criticism. So he had gone into controversy about comments he made about race last week.
Well, he was asked, have you an example of working with people that you completely disagree with on a board, but managing to work with them? And he said he had, and they were segregationists.
Yeah, but they were very hardcore segregationists from the South back in the day. And, you know, the judgment of using that as an example to say, what's your standard? You can work with other people across the aisle, but I think that was a bit misjudged.
But if you're Donald Trump, are you not sitting at home rubbing your hands and watching the Democrats tear each other apart over identity politics, which his base and a lot of other people don't care about?
But you're right, but then the problem for Joe Biden now is that there was a feeling watching this there on Thursday. If he's not able to take on a Kamala Harris, how is he going to deal with Donald Trump in those one-to-one debates?
Okay.
So I think the whole electability of Joe Biden issue that seemed to be his calling card began to... Now, he may save this. And, you know, we don't know, as you said, the opinion polls, they might not have changed much after Thursday.
OK. Colin McCarthy, you're being very quiet on all this. Are we looking at 4 more years of Donald Trump in your economic opinion?
Yeah, 5. I mean, the election is November next year. I sincerely hope not. One of the background features of the whole climate change debate is the absence of a coordinated position between the United States, the European Union and China. And more than half of all the carbon emissions come from those three places. China is about a quarter, the United States is about 15 or 16%, and the European Union is 10 or 11. And it has always been the likelihood that if those three, which dominate the world economy, if those three came together and said, look, folks, we've got a serious problem here, we've got to cut emissions, we're going to do it, and we're going to bully everybody else. Those three could bully everybody else. But Donald Trump believes, this is a direct quote, that climate change is a hoax got up by China to damage America. That's what he believes. And we're now in the remarkable position where, of those three key units in the world economy, the European Union has a serious climate policy. I think there's a lot of problems with it, but at least it's serious, and I think it's sincere. China is heading in that direction, and the United States doesn't. It has a climate change denier as president who has massive support.
Okay.
If you are a person that's worried about climate change, and if you're not, you should be, and a kind of a green or environmentalist person, you should be lighting candles that Trump gets beaten next year. If he's in there, these are very important years for all of this. If Trump is there for another 5 years, it's a bad outcome.
Okay, and we'll take a break.